Carl Stewart is an investment advisor representative of Carl Stewart Investment Advisor Incorporated. Call or text Carl now at 512-836-0590. Now, here's Carl.
Good afternoon, and welcome to Money Talk. I'm Carl Stewart, and you're listening to News Radio KLBJ. Thanks for listening. It's a beautiful sunshine afternoon in the 80s in Central Texas with low humidity. A great time to listen to Money Talk. This is a broadcast about the world of financial and investment planning, where you always determine the agenda by calling or texting 512-836-0590. We're now here together in our 27th year. It's always a great idea to call or text at the beginning of the hour because I don't have any phone calls waiting and no texts coming in so far. Oh, and by the way, if you'd like, you can listen online right now at newsradioklbj.com, or you can go there at your convenience and download podcasts of many, many broadcasts, many years of podcasts of Money Talk. And I was talking with a friend the other day, and he said, I thought you were on Saturdays, but I heard you on Friday. And that's because every Friday at 6 p.m., we replay today's broadcast. So if you particularly miss something you thought was important or when you were listening the first time, or you have a friend who you think would enjoy the broadcast, Fridays after the news at 6. One more time, 512-836-0590. Here's the text. Carl, what's your outlook and recommendation holding of tips and short-term tips? I have 9% in SCHP and 6% in V-TIPS ETFs, a 50% equity allocation. I'm 66 and will begin withdrawing about 2% from the IRA beginning next year. Other holdings, and I don't know the meanings of the names of these ETFs, 9% in SRLN, 5% in gold, 4% in preferred stocks and ETFs. So, I'm perfectly happy with your 50% equity allocation. I'm personally at 55%, so I certainly wouldn't quibble over that. I wouldn't quibble over 5% in gold. I'm 7, and of course I look like a blithering idiot there, as Gary, our listener, would be happy to tell me. I'm a little concerned about that tips. That's a pretty substantial weighting in tips, because you said 6% in tips and 9% in short. Well, no, I apologize. Holding of tips and short-term tips. So 9 and 6 is 15%. Tips have certainly outperformed regular bonds this year, but they are pricing in a negative yield. So, it's okay. You might want to back off some of that tips and do more in that short-term bond fund. But all in all, I don't have any problem with that. I'm not a big preferred stock fan. I never have been. It just seems to me that there's very little total return potential because for most preferreds, there's a limit as to how much they'll appreciate because they can be called at $25 a share. So they tend to be interest sensitive on the downside, meaning in a rising interest rate environment, they may well underperform or decline in value. And in a falling rate environment, there's not a lot of upside like you would get in a traditional intermediate term investment grade bond fund. So I'm not a preferred stock fan. Certainly on a current yield basis, I understand your thinking, or I surmise your thinking, because you're going to get more current yield there than in a short-term bond fund. But I think the total return potential diminishes over time as I think rates eventually start to move up. Thanks for the text, and that's a very interesting and thoughtful portfolio. You're listening to Money Talk on News Radio KLBJ. Call or text 512-836-0590. Carl, I funded a backdoor Roth IRA with the transfer from my traditional IRA account for $60,000 last year. I paid the taxes from my savings account. I would like to do the same this year. Do I need to open a new Roth IRA, or can I contribute to the older account? If I contribute to the older Roth, how does the five-year holding period work? This is really complex because these are conversions rather than contributions. And we actually went through that a few weeks ago, and Bob in Arlington educated me. And I think they're handled differently, depending on whether it's new money contributions or whether it's conversions. And you're talking about converting from the same IRA. I frankly am looking at my notes, and I don't have it. If Bob or Ken are listening and can text me during the broadcast, I would appreciate that. But I'm concerned that I said incorrectly that once you had the money in, you had your 5 years, but that was a function of contributions rather than conversions. And I vaguely remember that it's possible that when you do conversions, the five-year waiting period begins with each subsequent conversion. So stick around, and we'll see if we can get an answer today. And if not, I'm sure, given such thoughtful and intelligent and informed listeners that I have, that they'll help me get you an answer next Saturday. That's an excellent and highly technical question. It's time for me to take a break. Good time to call or text 512-836-0590. I'll be back.
You're listening to Money Talk with Carl Stewart on News Radio KLBJ, 590 AM and 99.7 FM. Enjoy the podcast on newsradioklbj.com. Now, here's Carl.
Welcome back. You're listening to Money Talk on News Radio KLBJ. I'm Carl Stewart. Thanks for listening. We're here this afternoon until 5. When you have a financial or investment planning question, call me or text at 512-836-0590. Robert, you're on the air. How may I help?
Yes. What is your opinion of using indexed universal life insurance as an investment vehicle?
Generally, I'm not fond of it as an investment vehicle because universal life's a very complex product, and a lot of people got in trouble with it in the early 2000s. So this, let me explain why this is. So when you make an investment in a life insurance product and you have a death benefit and you're putting in money, the premiums, there is something called the corridor of insurance where the value, your cash value, has to maintain a minimal value when compared to the death benefit. And what occurred back in the 90s when the stock market was going up over 20% a year for 5 consecutive years is a lot of people saw the universal life as a way to accumulate wealth or assets in a tax-deferred environment. And if they put their premiums in over 7 years, then eventually they could take money out of that, treat it as a policy loan, and not pay income tax on it. The problem was we had a bear market. And the stock market dropped over 50%, and that corridor of insurance was violated, and people's plans as to how much the premiums were going to be basically blew up on them, and they had to pay a lot more premiums. If they were unable or unwilling to pay those premiums, then that blew up the policy, and all of the cash value over and above what they put in was subject to income tax, and if they were under 59.5, a tax penalty. Also, if you owned the same indexes in your own name and didn't sell them, you would have negligible capital gains, perhaps zero, and negligible dividends, depending on the index you select. The other issue with index annuities is that one of their selling points is that you don't lose money in a bear market and you make money in a bull market. And you have to stop and ask yourself how that's accomplished. And it's done, it's legitimate, it's done using options. But what you give up is the upside. And as a consequence, when you have a year like this year, for example, where the Standard & Poor's 500, I do these before I come out to the office, out to the broadcast. The S&P 500 ETF's up 19.95. You don't get that. So as a long-term investment, yes, you avoid the big drawdowns, but you really don't get the big moves up, so that, in my view, for a long-term investor, you are paying a hefty premium for what turns out to be pretty subpar returns. So that's a long-winded answer, Robert, but I'm not a big fan of them for all those reasons.
Okay. Well, then what is your preferred investment option?
If you were trying to accumulate assets and your objective is to do it in the most tax-efficient manner, owning index exchange-traded funds, and you don't have to be a genius. You can own, you know, the total stock market index, the total international market index. They're designed so that, at least so far, they haven't distributed capital gains. They obviously pay dividends because the underlying equities, you reinvest those, which raises your cost basis. You maintain total liquidity, and your cost is virtually, I mean, it's really low. I mean, you can own these for less than 25 basis points, 0.25%. And if you choose to take money out, you're in charge of how much, and you're subject to the lower long-term capital gains tax than you are income tax. And finally, and we're in a weird time with the Biden tax proposal, but you're under current law also have a step up in basis at your death, so your spouse in Texas or your heirs get that index, those ETFs, and your cost basis from years earlier disappears, and their cost basis is the value of the day to your death, and then they have full flexibility to continue to own it and let it grow with a higher cost basis, or to sell it and have negligible capital gains taxes. So frankly, that's so simple, it's so inexpensive, and so tax efficient that that's the alternative that I would consider if I were you, Robert.
Well, what would you do? Let's look at a scenario where you're already retired and you're withdrawing some of your funds and you have some supplemental funds. I'm doing a Roth conversion this year.
Yeah.
I'd like to put that money to work, but I don't want to necessarily take the stock market risk.
Well, if you don't want to take the stock market risk, there's really little you can do, because if you're trying to make the money grow faster than inflation, that's your choice. Clearly, bonds are expensive. I mean, 40 years ago, the 10-year Treasury was priced to yield 15.25%, and today it's 1.4. So over your retired horizon, you're going to end up maybe making 1.5 to 2%. But you also could have a negative total return because the bonds could go down in value. I think it's a risk-reward trade-off. And you, in my opinion, there's always a relationship between those two. And if you're unwilling to take the stock market risk, then you're not looking to increase the assets faster than inflation, and your choices are limited to bond funds. Or I suppose in a Roth, if it's with a custodian, you can get brokered CDs. But certainly in the current environment, your return on that is a negative real return because it's less than the rate of inflation. I mean, there are no easy answers. We're deep into a bull market for stocks. We're very deep into a bull market for real estate and for bonds. So that's the conundrum. If you can stomach the equity market risk, then what you do is you don't put it all in at once, because periodically the stock market drops 50%. We just never see it coming. But there's no simple answer. Your question is one of those questions that's a heck of a lot easier to ask than it is to answer. There are no simple answers today, Robert. But those kinds of insurance products are extremely expensive. They have high internal fees, and they're really not made to be inside a retirement plan.
Well, what would you do with if you had the a Roth conversion and you were retired?
Here's the thing. Money has characteristics based on your anticipated holding period. So in the first bucket, it's money that you're going to buy for gasoline or pay for groceries. You don't care about the return. You just want it there safe and liquid. The second is you're going to buy something, a new car, or take a big trip in the next 2 or 3 years, and you don't want to take a lot of risk with that. But if you're in a Roth, that's a long-term deal, right? Because you're not even subject to the required minimum distribution. If you go look at the data and you say, what are my odds of a positive return in the U.S. stock market for a one-day holding period? The answer is 50%. But with each successive year, the returns, the odds of a positive return go up and up and up, so that if, say, 10 years, they're well over 80%. So you don't put money in the equity or stock market that you think you're going to turn around and take out. But if you're a longer-term investor, I mean, I'm not, you know, this. I've been doing this 43 years, and I see people's portfolios that have had good stock funds and let them run, and it's pretty stunning what the returns can be. And so if I were retired, frankly, that's what I would do.
Even if your time frame was, say, 5 years?
If your time frame is 5 years and you got to back off the stock allocation and you've got to put in some non-correlating asset, which would be investment-grade bond funds, so that when the stock market does decline, based on history, that's going to hold value, which will reduce the downside, which means you will come back from that down experience faster, because the valley is going to be much more shallow. And then when the stock market recovers, obviously, you're not going to fully participate because you have money in bond funds. But even though bond funds have negligible yield today, as long as you stay away from high-yield bond funds and you go with investment grade in short and intermediate-term maturities, based on history, what happens when we get back into another 50% drawdown or sell-off in the stock market, they're going to outperform the stock market and keep your losses. And what you do is you decide how much you want into stocks and how much you want in bonds. That's called asset allocation. That drives your returns. So if you got 50% in stocks, the market drops 30% and the bonds lay flat, you have a 15% downside. So that's how to think about asset allocation, in my view, Robert.
Now, what would be your recommendation for the asset split?
Okay. Matthew, put this gentleman on hold because we need to take a break. Hang on, Robert, I'll come back to you. Time for me to take a break. Great time to call 512-836-0590. I'll be back.
You're listening to Money Talk with Carl Stewart on News Radio KLBJ, 590 AM and 99.7 FM. Enjoy the podcast on newsradioklbj.com. Now, here's Carl.
Welcome back. You're listening to Money Talk on News Radio KLBJ. I'm Carl Stewart. Thanks for listening. We're here for another 25 minutes this afternoon. If you've been listening and thinking of calling or texting, do so now at 512-836-0590. Also, you may listen online at newsradioklbj.com or go there at your convenience and download podcasts of the last several years of Money Talk. And this Friday after the news at 6 p.m., you will have the opportunity to listen to a rebroadcast of today's show. Okay. So, Robert, you asked me what I would do, and that's a terrific question. And first of all, a lot of it has to do not only with your age, but also just with your own experience. And a phrase that, in my opinion, gets thrown around too casually, which is called risk tolerance. Because what I've observed in my 43 years around this whole investment world is that some people are able to make a psychological or emotional disconnect from their portfolio, and some people fret over it and watch it online every day or every 2 or 3 days. And the first group tend to have a much better allocation towards stocks and tend to make a lot more money, and the people who are anxious and nervous tend to make decisions based on, well, we've got a COVID, or we've got a real estate problem in China, or you name whatever it is. So I can tell you that the asset allocation is the single biggest determinant of risk and return. And I'm going to give you an example that because this really matters not only to you but to our listeners. Let's go back to the worst year for investors, 2008. U.S. stocks were down 40%, foreign stocks 50%, real estate investment trusts 55%. Oil went from $130 to $35, and high-yield bonds went down 25%, essentially no place to hide. So now let's take the biggest stock fund and the biggest bond fund available at the time. So it's not some secret fund that I'm a genius and only I know about it. If you started with $1 million in the Vanguard Index 500 and if it went down 40%, then you had $600,000 at the end of the year. If you had 60% in the Vanguard Index 500 and 40% in what was at the time the largest bond fund, PIMCO Total Return, you were down 25%, still painful. So over here in bucket number one, you have $600,000 because you've lost $400,000. Bucket number two, you have $750,000. Now, here's the deal. In bucket number one, you've got to make $400,000 on your $600,000 to come back to what you started with. That's a 66% return. In bucket number two, you have to make $250,000 on your $750,000. That's a 33% return. So even though the difference in the rate of decline was 15 percentage points, minus 25% versus minus 40%, you would have to have twice as much, 100% better return, 66 versus 33, to recover. So that's why asset allocation matters. So I can tell you that since I don't know you and I don't know your experience with risk and whether you can take a hands-off approach once you establish your investment allocation, but in today's market, a retired person could easily have 55% in equities with a five-year or longer horizon, in my opinion, because I think over the next 5 years, cash is going to have a negative return after inflation. I think bonds are likely to have a negative return after inflation. And so, I think given the cards that are available, that's how I look at it, Robert.
Okay. Well, I tend to not worry about it so much.
Good. That's the right attitude.
Every day, but if it were to go down, say, 25%, I would notice it.
Yeah. Well, I think what you do is you stress test that portfolio. So you say, okay, between 2000 and 2010, we had two periods when the stock market dropped 50%, okay? And it lasted a long time, from March of 2000 to September of 2002, and from November of 2007 to March of 2009, it went down. So if 25% is your pain point, then you say, okay, if the market drops 50%, which is extreme, but it's entirely plausible, and I have 50% of my money in stocks, and everything else doesn't go up, it just lays an egg, I got a 25% loss. And that's unacceptable to me, so I'm going to back off to 40% stocks. Now if the market goes down 50%, under that hypothesis, I have a 20% loss. If I don't like that, I put 30% in stocks, and now I have a 15% tolerance. That's how I know it's simple and it never works out exactly like that. But that's a way, in my view, to stress test your thinking.
Okay. What is the, you were talking about 55% that you do in equities. What was the remainder?
Well, I've got stuff that it's easy to say but hard to explain, and regular listeners know this. I use other strategies, including what are called market neutral strategies and event-driven strategies. And they've got fancy names, and I'm sorry, but there's merger arbitrage and event-driven strategies. So what happens is this year, the bond index as of yesterday has a total return of minus 1.18. The merger arbitrage is plus 1.51. And the event-driven is 1.53. So those are bond market-like returns, but they're not positively correlated to bonds. So I use things like that. But that's sophisticated stuff that I think the average person who's going to do it himself is unlikely to want to spend the time and do. But that's the answer to your question.
Okay.
Okay?
Makes some sense to me.
Okay.
All right. Well, thank you for the help.
You're very welcome. Good luck to you, and thanks for calling. You're listening to Money Talk on News Radio KLBJ. Call or text 512-836-0590. Now, I have got some serious texts for our listener who was asking about what he could do with a backdoor Roth IRA. So here we go. These are texts, and I recognize this number. These are experts. I think it's correct. The Roth five-year rule only applies under 59 and a half years of age. Each conversion under 59 and a half has its own five-year waiting period. Converted funds are always distributed tax-free. This makes sense since you already paid taxes when you converted them. However, amounts that were taxable at conversion may be subject to a 10% early distribution penalty if you're under age 59 and a half. If you're under age 59 and a half, the time of the distribution and the conversion was less than 5 years ago. The five-year clock begins separately for each conversion you do. That's what I thought. What if you are over age 59 and a half when you take converted dollars from your Roth? Then you have no worries about this five-year clock. There's also a separate five-year rule that applies only to those who convert other types of retirement accounts into Roth IRAs. I would take that would be like 401ks or 403bs. Here, the idea of the rule is to prevent people from using Roth conversions to get penalty-free access to their traditional retirement accounts. This five-year rule also starts the clock on January the 1st of the year in which you do the conversion. As a result, those who convert late in the year only have to wait a bit longer than 4 years before taking their withdrawal. However, this five-year rule is different in that it applies separately to each Roth conversion you do. Each new conversion starts its own five-year clock, and you'll need to account for multiple conversions to make sure you don't take out too much money too soon. And note that the five-year rule applies equally to Roth conversions for both pre-tax and after-tax funds in a traditional IRA. That means if you're using the backdoor Roth IRA strategy every year, and then it goes on to about Roth contributions. So, great answer. I hope I don't get that question again. We have all of our lines available. We're down to our last quarter hour. Call or text 512-836-0590. I shall return.
You're listening to Money Talk with Carl Stewart on News Radio KLBJ, 590 AM and 99.7 FM. Enjoy the podcast on newsradioklbj.com. Now, here's Carl.
Welcome back to Money Talk. I'm Carl Stewart, and you're listening to News Radio KLBJ. Thanks for listening. We're here for another 12 minutes. Good questions this afternoon. If you have a question, call or text 512-836-0590. I failed to mention this at the top of the broadcast. I take telephone calls first and then today's texts second and then previous weeks that I haven't had a chance to get to, texts after that. Jill, you're on the air. How may I help?
Hi, Carl.
Hi.
So I'm fully retired.
Uh-huh.
Most of my assets are in two IRAs.
Okay.
And I am your sad sack listener that, you know, is way too emotional. And
okay.
And so I was, you know, 90% into equities. And I've become so concerned about the stupidity of Congress not raising the debt ceiling, because they're all stupid enough and partisan enough, every single one of them, to not raise the debt ceiling, that I've taken half of the money out, and now I'm 50%.
Oh.
So two questions. Sorry?
Oh, I'm moaning.
I know.
Okay, go ahead.
Two questions for you. The 50% that remains, about half of it's in Vanguard S&P 500 fund. The other half, though, are in two blended funds, Vanguard Wellesley and Vanguard Wellington.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you're familiar with those funds.
Yes.
The Wellesley being probably a 60%. It's around 35% equities and the rest of its bonds. And Wellington is reverse, right?
Right.
So my question, I have two questions for you. Question one is, would it be better just to be 50% fully invested in something like the S&P 500, maybe a Russell 2000, and get out of the blended funds altogether, and then do something else with the 50%?
Yeah.
Or is there a place for the blended funds? So that's question one. And question two is, I hear you and I agree with you that most listeners, including myself, are not sophisticated enough to deal with
market neutral and event-driven.
And in fact, you had talked about these on one thing, so I went and looked them up, and I thought, no. But I need to do something, Carl. So what should I do? Like, are we talking MIGA, you know, multi-year guaranteed annuities?
Oh, God, no.
What are we doing? Help me.
So back when these, what we call balanced funds, were invented, in my opinion, they were invented to be one-stop shop, meaning I'd put money in Vanguard or American Funds or Fidelity or T. Rowe Price or J.P. Morgan or whoever would have guardrails like no more than 70% in stocks and no less than 50%. I'm just making that up. And and then they would stay in within that band, and that would automatically rebalance, because in a bull market – they get outside the band. They'd sell stocks and buy bonds, and vice versa, and that's what they were designed for. And for people who have been patient investors, they've absolutely delivered. Now, but you are more of a, even though you're not interested in doing your massive homework for merger arbitrage funds. Having said that, what you've done is you've become active, but you've also let somebody else take over your asset allocation. In my opinion, that's illogical. That's inconsistent.
Right. Right.
And so Wellington didn't get to be that big because they're bad. They're terrific funds, but they're not for you because they don't fit how you've self-described. So I think what you do, there's nothing wrong with the Vanguard Index 500. As you know, I tend to prefer the total stock market to give me a little broader.
Actually, I am too. I'm using VTI.
Okay, that's good for you. I think you ought to put some VXUS in there since you're a Vanguard person, because, you know, we've had 10 years of underperformance of international versus domestic. I think longer term, the dollar declines in value, which will be good for non-dollar investors. So I'd add some of the – and remember, everybody who's listening, I'm not making recommendations. Don't sue me over this. Jill and I are just talking.
No, please.
I think the VXUS for some money would make sense. And the Russell 2000, because it gives you a blended small cap exposure as opposed to Russell Growth or Russell Value. So I think those other two funds make sense as well for some of that other money. And then the balance – you need something that's non-correlating, and you're not going to do the alternative strategies unless you want to buy a little gold and use the exchange-traded fund, which is non-correlating. Then the other thing to do is buy yourself a shorter-term investment-grade bond fund. Those are the things I would consider if I were you, Jill.
Short term. So tell me, what's the VXUS? I don't remember. Is that
That's their broad international exposure index. So it's Vanguard. So that stands for Vanguard XUSA, right?
The XUSA. So that's the stock market broad equity.
Yeah, that's the international stock market ETF. That's correct.
Yeah. So you would do how? I mean, help me out here. How much would you roughly?
I'd have 20%. I would have 20% of my equity money international, to 20 to 25 international, and 75 to 80 domestic.
Okay, so you would have 70 and 50 and what, 50% equities and 50% short bonds.
Well, that's up to you. That's how you like I just talked about. That's the accelerator and the brakes.
You decide. I understand. It's like, how much can you stand?
Exactly. You do that, and then you come up with your equity allocation and put the balance in the shorter term investment grade bonds. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
And where do you think, in your opinion, is VTI going to come out over the next, let's say, 5 years, as opposed to VXUS and Russell 2000?
I don't have a clue. I'm not going to fall into that trap. I don't know.
I don't have a clue either, but I was hoping that you would fall into that trap.
No.
Damn you, you didn't.
That's exactly right. I'm not going to do it. All right. Talk to you later.
Super helpful.
Good.
And I've been coming more and more to the conclusion of this conclusion that I'm just not suited.
Yeah.
Because I would have to be really 50% in one of those funds.
Yeah.
And 50% in the, and I just can't.
Right.
I can't leave it alone.
Right. Exactly. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you very, very much.
You're welcome.
I really appreciate it.
Okay. You bet. Thanks for calling. You're listening to Money Talk on News Radio KLBJ. Pete, you're on the air. How may I help?
Yes, hello. Thank you for taking my call.
You bet.
I'm 75, retired. I have about, say, a million or so in IRA.
Yeah.
Okay. My son and I are interested in doing a spec build in Austin.
Yeah.
For obvious reasons. The goal is for me to fund it, and he's done a number of builds, so there's not an issue there. You know, borrowing from an IRA has its own pitfalls and limitations, I understand. Is it possible for me to invest in an LLC in my son's name funded by my IRA?
I don't think so. I think you have to keep the money in the IRA, so you're going to have to find a custodian who will allow you to put in non-marketable securities and then find out what is acceptable at the custodian. So I know we have listeners who have real estate investments, direct investments in properties and in dirt in IRAs with custodians to specialize in that. And that's what you're going to have to do, because I don't know the tax law on LLCs. And it worries me because you can come up with some real negative tax consequences, even if it's in an IRA. But there's no way to take money out of the IRA without paying income tax on it. So if you don't want to pay income tax and all of that, do your homework on finding some people call them self-directed IRAs. I hate that term, because if you could have a Fidelity IRA and you could decide what to invest in their mutual funds, and that's self-directed. But there are banks, trust companies who specialize in this, and they will open an IRA for you. You'll be able to transfer money into that IRA, and you'll be able to have an ownership interest in an existing, building a piece of real estate. You're going to have to be subject to the required minimum distribution, so you don't want to put all the money in there, because then you're in trouble.
Sure.
You don't have the capital. But that's right. That's the next step. That's the next step for you, Pete, is find yourself. And if you listen to this broadcast, I don't give out specific names because I don't want to be – my lawyers would come in and rip my teeth out. So I'm just going to tell you that there are multiple opportunities, and if you live in Central Texas, there are multiple opportunities to look into custodians who would allow you to build a piece of real estate inside of an IRA.
And with them taking their piece of the pie, so to speak.
Well, their pieces, yeah, but their piece is a few hundred dollars a year. It's just immaterial.
Okay, small. Okay.
Yeah, so they're bearing no legal responsibility. They're a custodian. They're not a broker-dealer. They have no legal compliance. You have to your son's going to have to assert a value because they have to have an annual valuation. But the costs, the costs of doing this are infinitesimal.
Okay. Thank you.
You bet. Thanks for calling. And I'm going to tell Michael, I'm sorry you called later in the broadcast, but we are running out of time, so call next week. Also, there's a few texts I got today that Matthew's going to print out for me in case I have a chance to answer him next week. Thank you for being such a great audience. Thank Matthew for being a great producer. Next Saturday after the news at 4, be sure and tune in to Money Talk.
Carl Stewart is an investment advisor representative of Carl Investment Advisor Incorporated.